your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we are continuing to focus on different resource sectors. In this segment, we're going to focus a bit more on energy and some of the critical minerals. We are chatting right now with Matt Battiali, editor of the New Energy Letter, published under the Mangrove Investor website, which I will link to within the weekend show posting. Matt, I want to start off in the energy field, especially in the oil sector, because oil, after a very impressive run in 2022 and some major gains being made in the stocks, well, it struggled a lot for this year, and the stocks really struggled this year and in a way kind of underperformed. But also we need to understand that oil price pretty much flat throughout this year. There's a number of different aspects that we can talk about, especially how it seems like OPEC is losing market share. But Matt, what do you think here? As we end the year, crude had what seemed like some drivers, like geopolitical issues and OPEC cutting production, that could have driven price higher. But again, price seemed very much flat, volatile. But where do we end this year in terms of the major catalysts?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think if you look year to date, I think crude is actually down year to date. Or at the very best, it's flat. In a year where, yeah, there were a lot of really important catalysts. You had war in Russia with the invasion of Ukraine. You had this a lot of unrest in the Middle East that exploded in the Hamas terrorist attacks in Israel. And then you had the Red Sea cut off to shipping due to piracy. This should have been a year, it felt like, where oil could have been over $100 to $125 a barrel. And what we saw was a run from July to October that took it from, you know, in the 60s to over 90. And then it's fallen all the way back down again. These tensions were a buy the rumor, sell the news issue. And we've seen that in the past with oil and gas as well. In the first two Gulf Wars, the oil price ran up until the shooting started, and then it came way back down. You know, it is one of those markets where the issues in the Middle East just aren't enough to derail supply. And I think a big part of that has to do with the amount of oil coming out of the West. I mean, U.S. exports in October were 4 million barrels. And that's, you know, that 4 million barrels per day. And that's really, really high. I mean, the highest ever, I think, was right around there. It was right around 4 and change per day. So this is supply coming out of a country that was the biggest importer at one point. And that's all due to really the shale revolution in the States. And we can't overvalue that. I mean, to reverse the U.S. from a net importer to a net exporter of crude oil really threw a monkey wrench into the supply demand of crude oil around the world. And we're still seeing the impacts of that. And part of it is that this turmoil that we see in the Middle East and in Russia doesn't have the same impact to the oil prices it would have had 15 to 20 years ago.
Matt, just along the lines of how pricing has responded this year in 2023, being mostly, let's just say, flat for the year, isn't some of that just the nature of the beast in commodities, where last year, 2022, oil and to even nat gas were the standout sectors? They were the sectors that were bucking the trend. They were doing good because of inflation. But we've seen inflation moderating all of this year, and I'm sure energy played into that. Isn't it just the case that a lot of times after a big run in a commodity, the following year, it may be from an outperformer to an underperformer? So isn't some of this just the market finding equilibrium on what is a good price for oil? And in that stasis, how are these energy companies set up if energy prices just stay in the 70s?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, one of the things that I always said about oil is it's cyclical. The prices are cyclical. They don't just go up and up and up because they're capped. When you start pushing the gasoline price to a point, people conserve, which reduces demand. And that's not just in the States, that's a universal. And so, yeah, you know, as an investor in ExxonMobil, say, or you know, Occidental Petroleum, you have to decide what valuation you're going to use. So what is a good price for their production? And I think people are settling in the 70s, you know, the 60s and 70s, and they're ignoring the spikes. So, you know, in 2022, it's interesting. We remember that in 2022 that the stocks did very well, but the crude oil price started the year at 75 and it ended the year at $75 a barrel. And it went all the way up to $120 a barrel in that year. And so companies like Exxon, BP, and some of the big refiners had a tremendous year. And they actually had a really good 2023 as well, where their profit margins were very high, because as oil prices fell off, their refined prices, diesel, gasoline, jet fuel, didn't fall as fast because they could blame inflation for holding their prices higher. So they had a pretty good year. That's coming to an end now. And as you said, like for example, ExxonMobil, these guys have come down quite a bit. We're looking at, they were $120 a share September. They've come all the way down to $100 a share now. They're still well above where they started 2022, which was at $55 a share, right? So there is some profit taking. But if you bought Exxon at the beginning of 2022, you're absolutely thrilled today, even though the share price has come down 20%.
Well, and that's what makes this so interesting too, right? Is that these companies, like some other resource companies, are making money at current prices. But if there isn't that upward momentum, we tend to see stocks drift and lag lower. One major takeaway from the oil sector this year was major M&A deals. You compare it to any other sector out there, the biggest deals happened in the oil patch. What does this mean for 2024, Matt?
I think that you're seeing efficiencies. I think that we're at a place where those big integrated oil companies have been able to recover their war chest, their cash positions from the COVID lockdowns. And they're looking to consolidate among the companies that maybe don't have the same cash positions, that are still struggling, but have the big land positions in the premier basins. Like the Permian Basin is still probably one of the world's, if not the world's greatest oil production areas today. And you have that fantastic mix of shale and conventional oil fields there. And that's kind of what we're seeing the consolidation around. You know, when you think about the shale boom, the price per acre probably started out around $1,000 per acre, and it got absurd. And what that did was it made these oil wells very, very expensive just to get the land put together and the drilling put together and the fracking put together. There was so much demand for all of those things that the oil wells got very, very expensive. We took on a lot of debt. We burnt a lot of capital. A lot of capital went to money heaven, because there was this expectation from Wall Street that every single well was going to be profitable. And then it wasn't. The oil price came down, thanks in part to OPEC pressuring the oil price. Those wells had to be written off. So a lot of money went to money heaven. We had a complete reset on the costs. And now the costs are starting to come back up, but we're coming out of a period where we were at a cyclical low in rigs working, and the cost per acre had come way down, and there were a lot of bankruptcies among the service companies. And so if your cost per well goes down, your profit margins are going to come back up. So this is, I think, strategically really smart of the big oil companies, who know that we're not weaning ourselves completely off oil in my lifetime or in your lifetime. And so, you know, if you're looking forward, oil prices are probably going to be above $60 a barrel simply because of supply and demand issues. If you can get your costs way down through an acquisition like we're seeing, this is a good time to buy.
Well, Matt, when you look across the universe of energy stocks in the oil and gas sector, is there a particular area that has your interest And it could be that you mentioned the Permian there as a basin. It could be other basins that have your attention. Do you like nat gas more than oil going into 2024? Do you like small growth-oriented companies with a good growth wedge? Do you like the larger dividend-paying stocks? What areas do you really like out of the oil and gas sector?
I think I like the service companies at this point the best. Nat gas is the sector that I want to love the most. But we call it the widowmaker for a reason. People always seem to get ridiculously optimistic about natural gas at absolutely the wrong times, you know. And so when that gas was like $950 a thousand, and it came all the way back down, there were people who were getting really absurdly excited at the beginning of 2023 when it was at $4. I think that there were some people that were able to pick off some profits, you know, in that kind of middle of the year, April to October period. But, you know, it's just come way, way back down. The problem I have with natural gas, and this is an aside, but this is why I would warn investors about looking at pure natural gas. Almost every oil well that we drill comes with a side of natural gas. And we're getting regulation now that make it much more difficult to just burn that gas off. You know, for years and years, what you would do is, if you didn't have enough gas to make it economic to put in a pipeline, you just lit a flare and you just, you know, it was a pretty little fire that burnt all the time that got rid of your waste natural gas, because you can't just vent it. When the U.S. is producing as much oil as we're producing today, we are also producing an absurd amount of natural gas. It's going to be very difficult for us without a really cold year. The reason that natural gas prices went to $950 a thousand in 2022 is because we stopped drilling oil wells. You know, that's why. Now it's game on again. And so I think you're going to see gas prices kind of range bound. And so I wouldn't be investing there. I would be investing in like a Schlumberger right now. All these companies have come up quite a bit, but the big service companies are going to be in a good position now going forward as we kind of come into a new cycle of drilling. You know, there's capital around again. People have made some money. We're seeing oil companies, like we said, there's plenty of money for mergers and acquisitions. And that means they're going to have to make those acquisitions pay, which means they're going to drill. And so you want the companies, Halliburton, Schlumberger, are turnkey, that can come into these basins. They can do everything. They can drill the wells. They can frack the wells. They can service the wells. And you can get a nice dividend. And these are the big ones. I like the big ones because one of the continuing hallmarks of oil service companies is that these companies have the ability to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory sometimes, purely from a business point of view. So I like to stick with the big ones that are kind of, they're globally known. You know, you can go pretty much anywhere, and if there's an oil field there, Schlumberger is probably there.
It's a good point. These companies are survivors, and well, now it's been a better market environment than it was about a decade ago when oil prices were in the dumps and there just wasn't that much money around. Let's move over to another energy sector, much smaller, but got a lot more money coming into it this last year. That's the uranium sector. There's much more optimism around it, rightfully so, because it does seem like there could be some more reactors starting up. But boy, oh boy, I feel like we've talked about that year over year from all the uranium bulls. But just look at how good Cameco did this year. Matt, what do you think about uranium in 2024?
It's a bull market. I like to think that it'll continue. I mean, you know, your point is right on with Cameco. I mean, you know, you look at 2022 and Cameco effectively traded sideways. It had a couple of moves where it wanted to get rolling. It never could break through that $30, $31 range until 2023. You know, we saw kind of in March, it kicked into gear and it ran from $24 to a high of almost $46 a share. I think that when you look at energy globally, right, you have to include uranium. And for many years, when people would talk about shifting away from hydrocarbons to new energy sources. They're like, renewables, it has to be renewables. And then, you know, after 5 or 10 years of putting in wind farms and solar panels everywhere, we realized, you know, maybe we can't just rely on renewables. We have to diversify. And uranium is kind of the first on the list. Uranium, we talked about this, I think, in the past. You need baseload power. You need a power supply that is there all the time so that when you come home, you can turn on the front lights, you can cook dinner, and you know the air conditioner will turn on if you want it to. Without a baseload energy supply like coal or uranium or nuclear power, you know, then you're kind of, you're stuck with batteries. And one of the things about battery tech is that we're not to the point where you can have reliable grid scale batteries for everyone. I know that there are, that's coming, and I know that that's being tested in some places, but it's not at my house. It may be at your house, I don't know, but it's not everywhere. And you know, people don't like rolling brownouts. It screws with your computers. You know, you can't cook dinner when you want to. You got to wait to dry the clothes. It's a pain in the butt. So that's where uranium is excellent. Nuclear power is excellent. But the other thing that's happened in the nuclear industry is that the, you know, there have been tremendous advances in reactors. And I know, Shad, you know a lot about this. I mean, the tech hasn't sat still over the last 25 or 30 years. And that's really important, because as we de-risk the nuclear industry, you'll get more uptake. You'll get more countries that say, hey, we maybe we should. And we've already seen that in Europe. You know, there are a lot of countries in Europe that have, that were no nukes ever to now nukes are part of their carbon-free energy supply going forward.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. It's interesting to see how many countries have reversed course, and where they were maybe against this, let's say 5 to 10 years ago, they're now, when you go to the COP28 conference, there's a lot of commitments coming in from a lot of the UN nations on, hey, we're going to be building these nuclear reactors, as well as countries you wouldn't even expect in Africa and in the Middle East. So there's a lot of build. But when you dive down into the companies, what a lot of investors are looking at, Matt, this year was a pretty wild year. Really, the first part of the year was noted by a big pullback in the sector. A lot of people were getting kind of negative by the spring and summer. But then after the summer, we've seen across the board, most of the uranium stocks surge in a big way. They were some of the best performing stocks in the resource sector this year. But again, like we noted with oil, sometimes stocks that do really well one year maybe don't have as great of a year the next year. You mentioned you thought this rally could continue into next year, but with oil, I mean, but with uranium prices up in the 80s and even close to 90 at one point, do you think that can sustain itself next year? Is there still more upside for investors positioning in uranium stocks?
That's a great question. These things, commodities are cyclical, and so it wouldn't surprise me to see uranium pull back. But one of the things that has changed about uranium, you know, is the supply system, right? So there's a dynamic that's changing right now. We don't have, we used to have the significant amount of uranium that came from the spent nuclear weapons, or the old nuclear weapons. We were taking them out of service, primarily the Russian ones. You probably remember the name of that agreement, but they would take them out of service and turn them into reactor fuel. But there were a fixed number of reactors in the world, and it was, you know, it would take 20 years. It would take longer to build a nuclear reactor and permit it than it would to build a new base metal mine. Those two things have changed. Number one, Russia's not doing that anymore. So we don't have access to, I don't know what that was. It was like 30% of the uranium supply we used to have. And it doesn't take 20 years to build a reactor anymore, because the reactors are smaller and safer, and they can be constructed faster. So you have the ability to bring on demand faster than we had looking back even in 2005, 2010. And we've cut a significant amount of supply. I think that we could see, especially if we continue to see the agreements where typically when you're going to build a new reactor, this is what the way it was in the past, you had to have signed agreements for fuel supplies that were multi-year, 5 or 10 year long agreements. And so if you're signing up reactors to a decade long supply agreement, then you're mopping up supply really quickly in a situation where supply is being reduced because of that that arms agreement ending.
All right, Matt, before we get you out of here, let's now move over to the critical minerals sector, one that is still garnering a lot of attention, but we've seen, at least this year, 2023, a pretty major pullback in a lot of critical minerals prices, and the stocks not garnering the same sort of money flowing into them. What do you think about critical minerals heading into next year?
Well, I'll give you one bearish case and one bullish case, and we'll start with my bearish case. I am tremendously bearish on lithium, and I know that you guys don't want to hear that, but this goes back to the conversation that we had in a previous pod, but the emergence of ExxonMobil as a potential lithium producer, taking oil field brines and using a direct conversion, you know, just pulling the brine out, pulling the lithium out of the brine and putting the brine back in the ground, has the potential to really, really change lithium supply economics. So even though the demand numbers look good, I think lithium price could come down. And so you really have to be wary as an investor in these emerging lithium development companies of what's a lower lithium price do to your project. That could be a real punch in the eye for some of these new projects. And for producers, if the lithium price comes down further, they're going to get hit on their earnings. And so, you certainly will see investors divest and wait for a better price. So I'm concerned about the whole lithium market. The other side of the coin is I'm still very bullish on copper. The copper supply demand numbers they just keep pointing toward higher copper prices. Every day there's more news that, unrest in Peru, where a third of the world's copper comes from. You have mine closures, you have a mine seizure in Panama with Cobre Panama mine, which produces, I think, 1.5% or could have produced 1.5% of the world's copper, seized by the government and taken offline. So you have supply disruption and you have nothing but positive demand numbers. And so, yeah, I see copper as my commodity for 2024, with the caveat that I'm also looking at graphite, because I do think that the battery numbers just keep going up, and primary graphite supply is one of those black boxes in batteries that I personally don't understand it all that well, and I haven't met too many people that can explain it to me, which means that there's potentially some opportunities there.
All right, Matt, thank you very much for all the time you spent with us throughout this year. It's been fun talking about the critical minerals space and diving into some of these other sectors. We'll chat with you throughout next year. And again, if you want to keep up to date on Matt's work, go to the Mangrove Investor website. Matt, Happy New Year. We'll chat in 2024.
Happy New Year.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.